Welcome to Mike's Camera Action, where we've jumped the wall, which wasn't as hard as it's made out to be, and we're ready to make some magic happen. I'm Carl, and as always, I'm joined by...
Oh, Alex, sup?
on the draw, ready to go. And this week, so we've been watching Stardust.
Yeah, it's another Matthew Vaughn film, which we reviewed earlier with Kick-Ass.
Yeah, and I really like this movie.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm really glad this was recommended.
By me.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. It's up there, dude. It's really good. This movie's like pretty high fantasy in a way. Like it's very magical and fantastical, and
I'd argue that this like sort of, I think this might have been kind of my entry into high fantasy.
Yeah.
Because like I was a bit, it took me a while to get into like Lord of the Rings and like the other sort of things that people normally count as high fantasy.
Yeah.
But like I really got into this as a kid.
Okay. What year did this come out?
I think 2007.
Okay, that sounds about right. I thought it was somewhere between 2006, 2008. I remember seeing ads for this at one point when
yeah,
I was
2007.
A child. Okay.
I think I went to see this in like the drive-ins or something. But yeah, I really enjoyed the film.
Where do we start with this movie? Probably from the beginning?
Yeah.
Let's go from the core concept. So you've got these two worlds where you've got England and its intersection with Stormhold, right?
Yeah, Stormhold.
And the point between these two worlds is the wall.
Yeah.
Which, as we said earlier, doesn't seem that hard to hop. It's basically like this cobblestone wall leading like in a big line across
two characters in the film managed to jump it.
Two characters in the film managed to cross over. That's it. Total of two. Which, yeah.
Well, no. I'm talking about two characters managed to just jump it.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, both characters just jump it.
Mm.
One manages to jump it and get into Stormhold. The other gets beat up. Sorry, three characters, because the old man also jumps it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not hard to jump. It's a pretty low wall.
Yeah, it's maybe like 4 feet tall and covered in handholds. So even if you couldn't jump over it, you could just climb it.
I feel like it's a wall that I could probably just vault
more
than anything else. It's not like not that high that I can't just like put my hands on top of it and lift myself over.
But of course, if you're going to cross this wall, you don't just hop over the top. You have to go to the breach. You know, you have to go the little spot where it's like kind of crumbled inwards. And
the hole in the wall.
Yeah. We're a nice old man who's however old, like he's been 90 for a long damn time, it seems.
Yeah.
He was an old man when Tristan's father crosses, and he's an old man when Tristan comes.
Well, he's an older man.
He's still an old damn man.
Yeah.
Like he mentions he's been doing it for 80 years when he decides no more.
Yeah, he's probably like 100 or something.
Over that, come on. He was not a 20-year-old man when we saw him for the first time.
Yeah, but that was like 16 years ago, 18 years ago.
Yes, it was 18, actually.
Yeah.
Tristan's 18.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah, it was like 18 to 19 years, so he's probably... Fuck this guy. It could be anywhere between 80 to 100.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe not 80.
Not 80. I don't think he's been guarding it since he was an infant.
It could be like high 90s if he's been doing it since he was a teenager.
Pretty spry for that. Like
that's
what kind of shocked me when I'm...
The
thing that throws me off about that guy is he backflips over the wall, like just dope flip over.
Yeah.
Back to the dope flips. Dope flips over Tristan and like kicks his ass with a walking stick.
Yeah.
And then I thought when that happened that he was actually from Stormhold.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was supposed to be this magical guardian that's been protecting it for however long. Like, he's this magical protector of the wall. But turns out, no, he's just an old man.
Yeah, he's just an old man.
It was so strange. Like, that to me, where I thought there was going to be something there, like, where this guy's a magical person from Stormhold, and then it turns out that he's just from England. When he sees two witches on the other side of the wall, he's like, all right, I'm going. 80 years, I don't need this crap anymore. I'm done.
Yep, no, I'm out. See
like, that's the moment when he draws the line. I was like, oh, I guess that was just a throwaway thing. Like, he's not magic at all. He's just a spry old man.
Yeah, he's just a very spry old man.
Very youthful for 100.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? I hope to be the same level of, like, athleticism today.
Yeah. I hope I do that good. So I hope I'm that fit someday.
Yeah, who knows?
I hope I look that good at 120.
Yeah, exactly. I do like the differences in the two kingdoms, though. Like,
yeah.
You've got England, who's like about, I'd say just before Victorian. Like,
I think that sounds about right.
There's no like signs of like intense industrialization, but it's just before it hits.
Yeah.
There are signs, like, earlier they do write a letter to, like, an astronomer about the falling star.
Yeah.
And, like, there's the big brass telescopes and stuff, so I think it's, you know, just before industrialization in England. And then you've got Stormhold, who's still in that, not quite medieval, but, like, fantasy medieval.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it is that very much like fantasy land approach, where it's not any specific exact period in time.
Yeah.
But it's very recognizable in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you get that it's the fantasy realm.
Like, you know? Everyone's carrying swords.
Yeah.
You know, people are carrying swords, people, you know, just rolling around on horses.
Mm.
You know, wagons are super common. It's all that sort of, like, just fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
But also everyone has beds and some other things.
Yeah. And then you've got things like airships.
Yeah, airships instead of, like, sea ships.
Yeah, people gathering lightning.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Like, I love Captain Shakespeare in this movie. He's such a cool character.
Yeah, Captain Shakespeare, played by Robert De Niro, is amazing.
I love him. He's so good.
Yeah, it's just amusing him trying to, like, hide who he is.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we always knew.
Yeah.
Didn't care.
We always knew you were whoopsie.
Yeah, and then he just immediately gets shoved back.
He'll always be our captain.
Yeah.
I love that. That was so, like, the crew's so sweet. I just love how accepting they are. Everyone in this movie is just so, like, accepting and lovely.
Except the ones that are trying to kill each other.
Except the monsters. But even then, they're, like, accepting of the way things are in a way. Like, you've got you've got the seven brothers there who are all trying to kill each other because the last one standing is king.
Yeah,
so they're all playing out their treachery.
See, that's how the King of Stormhold has decided, is that you have to be the last one standing.
Yeah.
The king references the fact that he bumped off his other brothers before his dad died.
Yeah.
Whereas he's like, nah, it didn't happen this time around. So you guys are...
So get to work, dumbasses.
When you think about it, they didn't have to kill each other. They just had to find the stone.
Yeah. Which I think was part of it.
Yeah.
But they kept that treachery thing on them because I think part of it was just... Mark Strong and like his character Septimus probably felt it would be easier to do if he was the only one left. Like, it's just, oh, well, if I'm the last one left, I'm king anyway.
I mean, Tertius tried to kill him anyway.
Yeah. Like, they're going to kill off each other regardless.
Yeah.
It's just the easy way to go about it.
Yeah. Also, the names of the princes are great. Had Primus, Secundus, Tertius, Quartus, Quintus, Sextus, and Septimus.
Mm.
The seven brothers... And it all got, like, a thematic name.
Yeah.
The king also had one daughter named Una.
Una. But going back to the point before, I was accepting. The ones who lose, the ones who die, and we see them born, into their ghost forms, they just have brotherly banter.
Yeah.
Which is so... The moment we switched to the ghost brothers, it was so good. Because there was just, like, being, one of three brothers... It was it was really well done. It was kind of familial, where it's like without the murder, of course. But they're just like the way they riff on each other is so good.
They're not. No one holds a grudge about actually being murdered.
Yeah, they're just like all these brothers know the rules and they accept that they lost. Like they're upset about it. Like, well, I got you beat me, you bested me, brother.
Yeah.
But they're like, yeah, but that's fair because if you didn't, I was going to bury an axe in your head or I was going to poison your meal or I was going to throw you off the building. Like, it was you or me, and I lost.
My favorite bit about it, though, is you still had, like, how they looked whenever they died.
Yeah. So the one that gets thrown out the window is just mushed
inwards. Primus's face is, like, flattened.
Yeah.
I think it's Tertius or maybe it's Quintus, whichever one. One of them has, like... You still see the blood on his chest and where his throat got slashed.
And he's still got the cut, like, across his neck.
Yeah.
You've got one of them still has got an axe buried in his head. One of them's very visibly been burned across the face.
Yeah.
Septimus, when he dies, is still, like... I think Septimus came out one of the best, where he's just wet all the time.
Yeah.
The other one that came out pretty good was the one who got poisoned, where he just gets to keep his looks.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Everyone else got mutilated. Like, the worst one was Primus, who fell out of the building, where he's just, like, he's just got a flat push up against his face. Like, he got hit with a shovel and it stayed that way.
Yeah.
Like, he got by far the worst.
It's what happens when you make a face and the wind changes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that they all riff on each other, and it's
I love them. They're such good characters.
My favorite bit is when Septimus dies, and it's just they're all sitting there like,
now what?
Please don't tell me it's like this for eternity.
Yeah, they're just like, I don't want to be with you guys forever. I don't want to have to look like this.
But my favorite thing though is that there's references to this sort of that sort of behavior of the killing of the princes.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah.
The pub that the last inn that they stay at is called the Wounded Prince.
Yeah.
It's just.
And I love just the match cut of like one of the brothers coming through the wall of that prince.
Yeah.
Which is really clever.
Yeah. It's just like, hey guys.
You guys should see what's going on in here.
It's like, no.
Dude. Bruh.
But yeah, so the world actually is built.
Yeah. Oh, and it's clever too.
Much like Kick-Ass, which was based on a visual novel, Stardust is based on a book by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
I've read the start of the book. I didn't get a chance to finish the book.
Is there much difference between the openings?
So in the opening, there's a market.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and if I remember correctly,
opens up with a market still.
Yeah, but the market's in England.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's people from Stormhold crossing into England?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
that was something we didn't get in this movie at all.
Yeah, I think it's like one day of the year or something they cross over.
Oh, okay. So some of their cool magical wares.
Yeah, like that sort of stuff. Like people come from all over to just buy and sell at this market.
Okay.
And the other thing that happens is the only other really remarkable difference is they give a bit more background to Henry?
Oh, Humphrey?
Humphrey.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, Humphrey and Tristan went to school together.
Yeah.
And Humphrey would always beat Tristan at fencing.
That gets a little bit touched.
And they have like a sword fight with sticks in front of what's her face's house.
That happens in this movie though.
Not to the same extent.
Oh, okay. Because it's quite quick in this, where it's just like clack clack clack, knock Tristan on his feet, and then it's like, all right, see you later, Tristan.
Yeah, but that one's more like Tristan's just being beaten up without like trying to defend himself, really.
Well, he tries, but he fails horribly.
Yeah, like it's not like they're not actually dueling.
Yeah, they do talk a little, like very briefly about it, where Humphrey's he has a throwaway line here somewhere.
Yeah.
Just about how he's like a far superior fencer.
Yeah.
Which
changes at the end of the film.
I mean, who knows? I would have been interested in seeing if this movie had gone a bit differently. I could see how the finale of the film would be like, let's say this was a completely different film entirely, where the finale of the film isn't we have the showdown with the witches and all this kind of stuff, but then instead of falling in love with Yvain, if like the Tristan character would have still been in love with Victoria and she's not a superficial bitch or whatever, I could see like the final showdown being between those two, where that's where all the marbles is. That's the like real...
Yeah,
world-shaking duel that you could potentially do that in a movie where it's like, oh fuck, this is the real stakes, man.
Yeah, but, I mean, but the end duel is just Humphrey pulls out his like little cane sword.
He whips out his like foil, and Tristan whips out a falchion.
He's like, yeah, boys.
Like, are you going to try this? Like, I'll duel you if you want, but I'll kill you.
Yeah, but my favorite thing though is still the idea that they were going that That it's like going all the way to Ipswich.
To Ipswich. Great. He's going to Ipswich? Cool.
Yeah. And it's like, I'd go all the way to London. And she's like,
I'd cross continents, oceans even.
Also, I really identify with Tristan's being, I'm not a shop boy. I'm a boy that works in a shop.
Yeah. Is that how you see yourself? Just a boy that works in a shop, not a shop boy?
Yeah, like basically. Like, I really like that. Like, the idea that, like, you know, he's just doing it for money.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Rather than like actually wanting to work in a shop.
Yeah. Even like there's a good contrast between Victoria and Yvain about that same thing where Victoria just calls him a shop boy and he has to say, I'm just a boy that works. I just work in a shop.
Yeah.
I'm not a shop boy. I just happen to have been working there. Whereas Yvain says there are shop boys and there are boys boys who work in a shop. I don't see you as a shop boy.
Yeah.
Like she just throws that out there and he's like, oh. Thank you.
Yeah, I really do like Yvain. My favorite bits come back when she references the like stuff about being a star.
Yeah.
And it's like,
what do stars do?
Shine. Yeah, and my other favorite thing, though, is when they first use the Babylon candle.
Yeah.
And so Babylon candles, you light them and they, like, magically transport you places.
Yeah, to where you're thinking of. Yeah.
So Tristan first uses it to go to where Yvain is.
Yep.
Even though his mother gave it to him to go find her.
Yeah. He's like, are you my mother? No, I'm not your mother. Look at me. Oh, right. I thought of Victoria and the star.
Yeah, it's like, have you seen a star around here? It's like, and Yvain's just like, what the hell is this dude on?
She's giving him right that here. Serious, like, eyes and shrugs. Like, what are you on, dude? Who are you?
Yeah, the actress that plays Yvain is very expressive.
She's and great. It's
great. She sells the film for me.
Oh, absolutely. She's got...
Claire Danes.
That's it.
Yeah, she sells the film. Like, her, like, expressions and, like, motion just, like, makes it so much better.
She has my favorite line in this movie, which is, it's about a little over halfway through when Tristan mentions, like, he's talking about Victoria, and he says that, oh, I'm bringing you to her to prove the way I feel about her.
Yeah.
And she has the line, which I had to write down the exact thing here because I think it's so great. What's she doing to prove how she feels about you?
Yeah.
And the moment I heard that, I was like, thank you, Yvain. Thank yeah. you for finally for calling out what's going on here, because this yeah. movie plays that like that idea off about like, oh, I've got to ask for a hand in marriage and all this kind of, like this very one-sided idea yeah. of like of love so well.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I also love like when they first use the Babylon candle together. It's like think of home.
Yeah,
and they think of each other's home.
They both think of where they belong. So he tries going to England. She tries going to the stars. And
they
halfway
end up halfway
is in the clouds.
They end up in the clouds and they're just standing in like a it's rainstorm. Like,
yeah, they're just standing in a cloud, like there's lightning everywhere, they're being rained on. It's like, well, I tried, what do we do now?
Yeah. There's no more Babylon candle.
There's so much cool stuff in this movie that I like so much.
Yeah. Like there's also the flower which like protects him from like
yeah.
magic
the,
that's meant
the glass
to harm
flower.
Him. Yeah.
Which is the only way he managed to win that final encounter.
Yeah.
So.
He's like, it's like.
Which, by the way, the fight with the witches where Septimus and Tristan are taking on the, like, the witches' coven. It's so great seeing those witches' powers come into effect where Septimus is fighting one of them and she's just using, like, heat spells and fire spells. There's a moment in there where I was like, oh, that's like a classic fantasy, like, D&D yeah. style spell where she can't, where she heats up his sword.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's heat metal. Like, I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's a classic. That's like a classic thing.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. if you laugh every time I say wild, I'm gonna leave the podcast.
Okay, noted. I was telling you this earlier. Like I hope someday someone loves me enough that that they're willing to fight, that they'd be willing to like do what Tristan does in that encounter where he sees the hag, like the witch, just break Septimus, like just totally ruin him, break his arms with a plasticine doll and drown it. And then he's still willing to say, I'll fight that.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, some of that encounter like sort of is dumb. Like,
yeah.
Like they just release the animals and the animals do all the work for one of them. Yeah. One of them, I don't even remember how she dies. She just dies.
The first one, which is the one that's like throwing fire at Septimus, he just skewers with a glaive.
Yeah.
Like, he just picks up a sword off the ground, just chucks it at her and impales her.
Yeah.
Which this movie's like PG-13, but there's a lot of violence in it, which is like kind of hidden.
Yeah. My favorite bit though is when the prince's throat gets slashed.
Yeah. And he bleeds blue.
Yeah. I love that because, you know, they're blue bloods.
Is the royal bloodline blue or is it just people bleed blue? I don't know.
The royal bloodline.
The royal bloodline.
Yeah, because it's a joke because, you know, royals are referred to as being blue bloods.
Fair enough.
Well, they are. Hmm. Huh. I didn't realize that the narrator was Ian McKellen.
Yeah. Picked up on that immediately. It's great. I love him so much.
So great. All of this film is like well put together.
Mm.
Like there is definite like building around it.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at now?
I just read one of my notes, which is really early on. Ah, yes. Let me bring this kidnapped woman to the woman I wish to marry. That'll convince her.
Yeah.
Like, he could have done that with... He could have dealt with Yvain so much better than just, here, I'm going to chain myself to you and drag you against your will to the woman I want to marry. That'll really show her. Like, hey, I found this woman in the forest. I swear she's a star.
Yeah, like, that's the really bizarre bit. He just, like, kidnaps a woman. Like, all right.
He really didn't think that thought of, like... He could have just gone, hey, I'll give you the... Like, he could have gone straight out, like, all honest from the beginning. Like, I need to bring a star to the girl I want to marry... So can you please come with me and I'll give you the Babylon candle and send you back home? That'd be great. Instead, he's just like, I'm going to chain you and drag you and then I'll explain later.
Also, like the drunk innkeeper who's like,
oh, God, not the innkeeper.
Do you have a pen and paper? What? And then he like butchers the message.
The message is, I love that message scene, even though it's so painful and like just heart-wrenching, where the message, depending on the inflection, is completely different. Like, the way he tells it was, I found my true love, I'm going out and I'm going to see Victoria, and then that's the message he gives.
Yeah.
And so he says, oh, he left early in the morning, says he's found his true love and he's going to go see Victoria. It's just like, but he meant like, no, I found my true love, which is you, Yvain.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go see Victoria to tell her it's not her.
Yeah, tell Victoria... Leave me alone.
Yeah, like the act of the innkeeper saying it in that way
makes
it entirely horrible. Yeah, but the act of Tristan saying it would have made it so much sweeter. You know?
It's the classic sort of like rom-com-esque like miscommunication of a message.
Yeah, and she's just like, well, I guess he just wanted to bang a star and leave then.
Yeah. I like how they just all go to that wall and it's like, okay.
It's just a ballad.
Una still so. Ditchwater South's bloody cart. Also, it's like, oh, I'll take you there.
Mm.
But you have to keep safe. And he turns into a hamster.
Yeah. That's so... Just turns him into like a little ferret or whatever.
I think, you know, it's a mouse. And it's like, yeah, I feel like cheese.
Well, yeah. I thought you just wanted cheese.
Yeah.
She confesses, pours her heart out to him.
And yeah, thinking he can't understand it, but he can.
And he gets all of it. But even then, when he wakes up, he just goes, Victoria, huh? What? Which I was like, God damn it, you asshole.
Yeah. Also, the bit where...
She's like, into you.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. I did like the coronation scene.
Oh, God, yes.
Because it just brought a whole bunch of characters back.
Everyone in the movie is just there.
Yeah, like... Like, you've got Una and Duncan, like, Tristan's parents, see each other again for, like, the first time in...
Which is so sweet. Like...
Who knows?
Yeah.
In 18 years.
19 years, yeah.
Yeah, because Tristan...
Tristan had just turned 18 when he leaves for the wall.
Let's see. He had Humphrey make weird eye contact with Robert De Niro's character, which sold it.
Yeah, which was so good.
And, like, Captain Shakespeare kind of winks at Humphrey, and Humphrey's like,
And
Victoria looks at him like...
There's a brilliant moment in that movie where I was just so happy, which was seeing Humphrey and Victoria sitting next to each other, and they're miserable.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, sweet justice.
Yeah, they hate each other.
Exactly. Like, Tristan's gone on this great adventure and found love, and also in the process has gained immortality and reunited his parents.
Yeah.
And also, has become the king and has gone this great, like, gotten all this stuff from it. And all Humphrey got was a woman who is purely superficial because he bought her a ring.
Yeah, he bought her a ring and it's not even a good one. It's only from Ipswich.
Exactly. He went to Ipswich to get her a ring.
Yeah, go to London, mate.
Go you, pal.
Yeah,
Like, sure, she's only into him because he's, like, handsome. Like, he's a charming dude with some, with, I guess, enough money to go to Ipswich.
Yeah.
And he's only into her because she's attractive.
Yeah.
Like, that's all she's got.
But
she's kind
of
pretty.
No, but, like, I meant, like, from some of the, like, side eye that you get between Shakespeare and Humphrey.
Oh, yeah.
Whether or not he's really into that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, I like that because it adds a bit of depth to characters, especially when, like, Victoria notices and is, like, disgusted, visibly disgusted at the idea.
Hey, don't take a trophy man from her.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it's all she has, dude.
But my favorite bit, like, is still, like, all the, like, they're all, like, all the pirates are sitting like front row in the coronation, like, yeah!
Yeah, he gives them the fist bump and they all do the same, like,
yeah!
I love the pirates. I love those guys.
Yeah, those guys are all like pretty chill.
They're awesome. Like, the support there for their captain is so great. Like, they see Septimus go off, like, to hunt down the captain and interrogate him. And they're just like, all right, well, I guess we're killing his crew and saving our captain.
Looks like we're in a sword fight now, boys.
Yeah, and they just start it because they're like, we have to help our captain, guys. We're doing this.
No, my favorite bit, though, is how that encounter starts with the music playing. Yep. And they all, like, pull out the, like, all the guards pull out their swords, like, really, like.
They bow, dance. And then one of them just jumps in and axes the guy.
Yeah, just like, and all the pirates just, like, bounce in.
Yeah. They're all like, beautiful. Honor, wha-bam!
Also, I like Tristan's GTA-style haircut, where he goes in for a haircut and ends up with longer hair.
Yeah! He goes in, he comes out really dapper, though. Like, yeah, Captain Shakespeare hooks those two up.
Yeah, no, Captain Shakespeare knows what's going on, knows what looks good.
Mm.
My favorite bit, though, is it answers the question about a... my favorite bit, though, is that seeing Charlie Cox as, like, young Tristan in comparison to seeing him as Daredevil and seeing Henry Cavill as Humphrey rather than, like, the super Superman, buff Superman-esque type thing.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Like seeing those superheroes before they were.
Yeah, like Charlie Cox isn't, like unfit in this film, but he's not, like, the buff. Like
He's not as cut as he is.
No, he's not cut. He's, like... He's athletic, but not cut.
He just seems like a healthy guy. He's not. Yeah. Yeah. He's not particularly jacked or anything.
No. No one's really jacked in this film.
Yeah.
Unlike
Henry Cavill now, I'd say Henry Cavill now, who like in Mission Impossible 6 is like ripping out of his own button-up shirt.
Yeah. Like and so Charlie Cox to an extent in Daredevil, not as much.
He's not Charlie Cox in Daredevil is not nearly as jacked like. Not nearly as much as even like Chris Pratt did for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, but like
he's still he's in good shape, but he's not like the superhero. He's not gone the full blown superhero diet that
Evans. To do it for like a TV series is very difficult.
Don't have the work to do that.
Yeah, it's got that's long term maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah, but even then, Daredevil, like the character of Daredevil, isn't even. It doesn't make sense that he would be as jacked anyway as Superman
or
Captain America.
Yeah.
He's a guy.
He's relatively cut, but like he's like not super jacked. Yeah. He's got an ability.
Yeah, he's got a boxer's strength. You know, that's it.
Yeah,
or an MMA fighter.
Yeah. So like, and I really like it though. It's just like, oh,
little Charlie Cox.
Yeah,
little baby Charlie
so
Cox.
So innocent, and then you see like grizzled Daredevil.
Just angry at the world.
Gonna clean up crime in my town.
Got his Catholic guilt superpower on.
He, you know, he jumps around, like, you know, he's in a corridor all of a sudden, and bam, Daredevil.
Unfortunately, he doesn't get too much super cool fighting on in this movie.
There's not a whole bunch of fighting going on in this movie anyway. You're right. No. A lot of it gets hidden away.
Yeah. They have to obscure a lot of it.
Yeah.
There's a fair bit of, like, especially with the witches, there's a bit of gore going on. Like, you see them butcher a couple of animals every now and again.
Yeah.
There is, the witch that was holding Una as a slave, she just gets her head blown off.
Yeah, Ditchwater Sal. But because it's not like a bloody blown off.
No, it's just like...
It's vanished.
But her head just goes and it's just green fire where it was.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, can they show this in a movie? She's stumbling around without her head on.
Yeah, but it's played for laughs.
I know,
the worst,
but that's horrifying.
That's the bizarrest bit.
Then she just flops down the ground and burns up. And I'm like... Like, right towards the ending, I was like, hang on, this movie's PG, where we get, like, one of the brothers gets his throat slit in a bathtub, a witch gets her head exploded, then incinerated, and then Septimus throws a glaive through a witch and pins her to a wall.
Then he drowns.
And then he drowns.
But, like, you see his arms bend the wrong way. And...
That was horrifying, by the way. Yeah. Like, that was the moment where I was like, yeah, no, I haven't felt this about anyone where I'm not in Charlie Cox's situation. I'm not going in for her. She can have that immortality. I'll leave. You know what? Maybe Victoria was worth it. I don't know. You know?
Yeah, but
like, that's the point where I'm like, if I watch a witch break a man, like just snap him like a twig and then drop him in water and kill him, I leave.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Oh, actually,
I'm not heroic enough.
You know what my favorite bit, though?
Shoot.
You reminded me of one of my other favorite bits in that fight. where Charlie Cox Tristan is trying to do the classic like fantasy cut the chandelier right up the yep. rope, take out the villain.
Yeah.
And he does it three times.
He does three ropes. He cuts one that's like drops the chandelier into the water, like into the fountain.
Yeah.
Cuts the next one, which misses the witch by about a second.
And almost hits your vein.
Yeah. And then drops the third one, which finally hits Septimus and is the right one.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, sure. He had plenty of time, dude.
He just flies up, kicks her, and it's like, what the?
I love the zombie fight with Septimus.
Yeah.
Where it's just his body like all limp and flailing about like with the sword. So he's just like full bent over backwards, but his arms up and just like fighting dexterously with the sword. He's like dragging an ankle, like that kind of stuff. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, especially like floating off the ground almost.
Yeah. Like just hit, like it was such a good depiction of like a body being puppeted.
Yeah, it was so good.
It was really I saw that and I was like, hell yes, that's how it should look when like a character's being puppeted around and thrown about.
Yeah, it's no one's fighting it. It's just constant.
Yeah, it's just like a dead look on his face. His head's not even being used because she's got no interest in like.
Yeah.
Anything in him but the sword hand, and that's what she's controlling. So he's just shambling along in order to slash at him.
But even then, it's only like parries like up or like to the side sort of thing.
And like you see Tristan just slashing at him and stabbing him, and it's having no effect because he's just a body. Like it's literally just a puppet coming at him. It's so well done.
It's so well
It's really
done.
Cool. I love that.
Yeah, I just like the idea that I really like the magic in this film.
Yeah.
Like, I know you've spoken a bit about it, but, like, overall, like, there's flowers that protect you. Mm-hmm. There's, like, the king was able to use some minor magic.
I wouldn't even say minor. He took his amulet, faded the ruby.
And chucked it into the stars, basically.
Yeah, threw it into space and knocked the star to Earth.
Yeah.
That's pretty potent
stuff. Yeah, Yvain mentions, like, you know, it's just enjoying my time till I get hit by a bloody rock.
Someone beamed me with a rock.
Yeah. Which makes me wonder, like, how do the stars sort of live? Is there, like, just...
That's what I wonder. What do the stars look like in space?
Do they all look like what Yvain does in the other depiction of a star we see, where they're just, like, in those robe things?
Yeah, that's what I wonder. Like, is she a human when she's on the human world?
Yeah.
Or is space just a whole bunch of like people floating, shining really bright? You know?
What happens to Tristan? Does he become
a star?
Yeah.
Like at the end of that movie. Cause like when Una gives them a Babylon candle.
Yeah.
So it says like in narration, after their children and grandchildren had all grown up. They took their place among the stars, and we see like two more stars added to the sky.
Yeah. But like, are they like light years apart, or are they like together?
That's what I thought, because I thought they were surprisingly far away. Like, I was expecting just one star to light up, and then it's like, oh, there's two. And I was like, I was really heartwarmed by this by the ending of this movie. I was like, oh, it worked out so well, and it's really beautiful, and everything tied off and paid off really well, and there was no real loose ends.
That's what I really like about the film is that there's definitely like this is the end.
Yeah,
and the end.
Yeah, everything ties in.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't find, there might be, but I certainly couldn't see any loose threads sticking about. They managed to tie in everything. So they reunited his parents.
Yeah.
We got resolution with Victoria and Humphrey. We got some resolution with Captain Shakespeare. We got like everything tied together in a neat little bow between like the king plotline, the brothers, everything.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, it's done. It's all like in the coronation scene, that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, everything's there.
And then you find out that they live like happily ever after and there's like they have grandkids and then like when they're all grown, they're like, see yous and go into space.
It's just so sweet.
Do you think Tristan ended the tradition of them killing the others?
I hope so.
Part of me wonders whether or not it was how much of that was like just their dad or them and like that general.
Because he is part of that family. Because he's the last, once Septimus dies, he's seen to be the last remaining male heir.
Yeah, he's the last remaining male heir of the Stronghold bloodline. Yeah.
So that's a good question.
Theoretically, if he'd picked up the stone before that, he would have turned it red.
Yeah.
And then he would have just become king anyways. Like, what does this mean? Like,
huh? Oh, okay. I mean, they were carrying it the whole time. Like, he could have just done that.
If he'd just been like, oh, what's this? And it turns red.
Ooh, that's fascinating. Septimus would have found it later, like, the fuck, dude? You were just carrying this? You ass.
He's like wearing it on a chain. It's like, I'll give you some money for it. And he's like, he's like added some more gold chains on it. And he's like, Mr. T.
This is my bling.
My bling.
I was telling you this before, but I like this movie. So we're talking about last week with Immortality about like Tales from Earthsea's perspective on it.
Yeah.
This does the complete opposite. It has the complete opposite perspective where it says, no, immortality is great.
But like, I think it says something that like only the evil characters were actively seeking immortality.
Oh, yeah.
Like you have to do some bad things to get immortality.
That's the thing. You can do
strikes it lucky with a technicality.
Yeah. Well, the way it's phrased is like, if you have like whoever owns a star's heart, whoever has the heart of a star gains immortality. So everyone perceives that to be, you kill a star, you cut it open, you take its heart, you eat its heart, you live forever.
Yeah.
And that's just the thing that they do. And so the three like witches are sharing the one heart, so they're like
they age, but like they're still alive.
They've slowed it down. Like they've lived. They mentioned like the last star that fell was 400 years ago.
Yeah.
So they've been going on for a while.
Also, it's as if it's kind of like the unicorn blood thing from Harry Potter, where it's like they can't really use magic in that while they don't have anything because like And as what's her name takes the star and eats like the last bit of it.
Yeah.
Kind of messed up. All you see is like the glow from like behind her hands as she puts it into her mouth. And oh god, that's just messed up. As you see her do it, she turns younger.
Mm.
But like if you use magic, you're going to return back to this older form.
Yeah, it keeps like as she's burning magic, she's using up that protective ward on it. So this has like Yvain asks Tristan if he'd be interested in immortality, like if that's something he'd be after. And he says like, well, I think it'd be rather lonely, don't you think? Not without someone not without someone you love to be with you. And so the fact is like those two share immortality and live forever in, among the stars.
But the other thing is let's say there's five characters seeking immortality.
Yeah.
Ditchwater Sal.
Mm-hmm.
Septimus.
Yep.
And the three, like, the Coven.
Yeah.
Let's call them the Coven.
Yeah.
And so of the three, the leader of the Coven
mm-hmm.
ends up trying to get the immortality just for herself.
Yep.
Septimus tries to do it for himself.
So he can become Forever King.
And Ditchwater Sal also does it for herself.
Yeah.
As soon as she finds out who she was talking to, though, she's like, how about no? But never mind.
Yeah, I'll pass.
No. So like, all the characters that were actively seeking immortality...
Are evil people. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. It's like actively seeking it is evil, but if it happens.
But the thing is like they say, it's great though. Like you get like the way they do it in this movie is it like the way Tristan gains immortality is through the process of love.
Yeah.
Like for trusting in love, he gains immortality as a side aspect, which pays off like it's panned in a really positive way of like, he spends forever with this person. Like, those two work out just forever, which is really sweet.
Yeah, it is. But I still disagree with the whole immortality thing.
Nah, love it.
Nah, it's not great. I don't know why you keep thinking it'll be great.
Because you get to spend forever with the star you love.
If I say falling star, maybe, but...
Nah, you're the kind of person who'll cut its heart out, eat it.
Gross.
Delicious. Ugh. Don't you think a star's heart would taste pretty good though?
I don't know. Like,
how would you cook it?
Would it be like? Would it just be? I figured you have to eat it raw.
Yeah.
Because how are you gonna get your oven that hot?
Season it a bit.
Add some salt.
Maybe you just like do the I don't know what the preparation's called, but it's where like you cut it really thin and then add like lemon to it and the citric acid cooks it. You know.
Oh man, that's. All right, so as Carl's
bite-sized pieces.
Carl's basically just now describing pseudo-cannibalism.
It's not... Stars aren't people.
That's why I said pseudo-cannibalism.
They look like people, but they ain't people.
All right.
is Carl 4 eating aliens? Maybe. That's only if they taste good. The only reason we don't eat people is because they taste lousy.
Yeah, I don't...
One of my favorite Futurama lines.
Yeah, it's kind of messed up. What? Like, about eating the...
Eating star hearts?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just dehumanize them and you're good, right?
Sure, sure.
Think of all the evil I could do with a star's heart.
That is so messed up.
Yeah?
I don't know why you want immortality.
Okay, I just dug through my note and I found it such a great line from Captain Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah?
Where he's just like, he mentions, it's where he's just seemingly thrown Tristan off the edge of the ship.
Yeah.
And then he grabs Yvain, he's throwing her into her cabin. And he's like, no one interrupt me or I'll give you the same treatment too. And one of the crew members just looks at him like, you mean? And he's like, no, you idiot. I'll throw you over the side too. I'll throw you over the side as well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, okay, boss, sure.
Yeah.
I love that line. It's just like, you'll do that to us. No. No. You know?
No. I think that's actually one of the hints that, like, showed that...
That they knew. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Like, there's a lot of characters in this film.
Mm.
It's not just one of those films where, like, oh, there's, like, half a dozen, maybe. Mm. Like, with Kick-Ass, like, there's like, a select few.
Yeah.
Like, there's some goons, but, like, it's just, like, six characters, whereas, like, with Stardust... You're being introduced to everyone. Like, there's Ricky Gervais in it, like Ferdy, who's the, you know, scummy dealer.
Is Ricky Gervais ever able to not be Ricky Gervais?
No.
As soon as I saw him in this movie, I was like, ah, yes, there's Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, so you got Ricky Gervais being Ricky Gervais. You've got, you know, the witches. You've got a lot of them are all given names, too. Like, they're people. They're not just goons. Yeah. And I love this about the film. It definitely has a world, and that's always what I love to see in fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, sometimes it's done... Sometimes you don't have to build the world, but in stuff like this, you do, and they do it so well.
Mm. One of the things where I cheered in this movie was when... So Tristan has some great... I love Tristan's, like, air for theatricality at the end.
Yeah.
Where he's like, it's her birthday, I have to go see her, and then give her the stardust I went to get. Like, give her the piece of a star, and then at the same time say, yeah, but no. And so there's this moment where he's, like, holding her, like he's lowering her down to the ground, and then I was just like, drop her, do it. And then he straight immediately after, he just drops her, and I was like, yes, he did it!
Yeah, it's like you and Humphrey deserve each other. What? Bye.
He's like, just grow up, and then just drops her. And I was like, yes, you mad lad, I love you.
Yeah.
I love Tristan so much.
Yeah, he turns from, like, cute, innocent, like, shop boy into, like, legitimate, like, hey, here's my sword, boys.
It's a bit of a coming-of-age movie for him, which I really like. Like, he learns the value of true love.
Yeah, and I feel like as terms of, like, coming-of-age, it's not often that you see it in fantasy done this way.
Yeah.
It's more often than not either, like, a high school drama, or if it's done in fantasy, it's still, like... There's, like, a lot more drama. There's, like, less love and more, like, friendship or something.
Yeah.
And like, this way it's done, like, super well.
Mm.
Yeah.
I do like this. Thank you so much for recommending it.
It's one of my favorite films.
I can see why. Next week I'm still trying to figure out what the movie's going to be, but
it's a surprise.
I'll record... If I get done in time, I'll record a little post thing and put that at the end of this. But so next week on Mike's Camera Action... It's going to be December, so we're starting our Christmas movies for December. We're probably going to miss the week of Christmas, but we'll still get as many Christmas movies out in time. Also, next week, Alex is going to be away.
Yeah, I'm away for like 2 weeks.
For the next two episodes. So the YouTube version in the next episode might be coming out a bit later. It will be coming out later, if at all, but you'll still be able to listen to this episode wherever else you listen to them.
There's nothing stopping you from rendering out video.
I don't have the After Effects stuff, so we'll need to arrange that at some point. We'll figure it out in time.
The next episode, we'll be looking at A Christmas Story. So join us next week for that, won't you?